Sanchez, you psycho bag of squatch!
Hey, what's up, Squatchy?
Hey, Squatchy.
Morty, Summer, and you must be Beth. On Squatch, hey!
Your language has the word squanch in it a lot. Doesn't that become tedious and worn out like the Smurf thing?
Beth, Squatchy culture is more contextual than literal. You just say what's in your squanch and people understand.
Oh, okay. I squanch my family. I squanch my family.
Stop saying it, gross. Come on in, guys. The guests are having cock squanches.
TBTL.
There are times in life when no matter how hard we try, no matter how much we want to win, sometimes it just isn't meant to be, and we fail. Today I want to tell you something, not about winning or losing, but about the spirit of never giving up. The spirit of the Cleveland Browns.
I know those words, but that makes no sense.
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
I love Switzerland. It is one of my favorite countries. I love your army knives with the toothpicks and your cheese. Does the cheese come out of the cow with the holes?
You just drop in and just smack the lip. Whoop! Drop down. Snap. Ah! And then after that, you just drop in, just ride the barrel and get pitted. So pitted like that.
Yes, just like that, everybody. Just like that, on a Thursday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
That must be weird for you, huh? Kimmel's now the new king of late night, and you're still doing a podcast?
I can assure you that no part of this project passes the Jimmy Kimmel test. But I think it's going to be pretty listenable. My name's Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Kathy Buddy and her family have had enough.
It also doesn't pass the Buddy family test of Colorado Springs, Colorado. But ever forward, that is our motto here on this imaginary radio show, my portion of which comes to you today from the banks of Lake Michigan and beautiful Chicago, Illinois, the Bay City.
Jalapeno!
We have lots of stuff to discuss with you here on episode 2473 in a collector's series.
Let the fun begin.
Kevin Durant, the somewhat recently minted most valuable player of the NBA Finals. Well, cuckoo ca-choo, he may be the Eggman in that he's been making up fake Twitter and Instagram accounts to go onto his Twitter and Instagram page and feature comments defending himself.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
And yet, I will tell you, the way that Kevin Durant has fallen on his sword, presumably a very tall sword, it's kind of heartwarming and endearing. And I think even if you are not into sport, I think it's an interesting story about just like how insecure all of us are and what to do when we get busted being super insecure. So we'll talk about that. Also, your shower towel is probably a death trap. Yes, your shower towel is maybe the biggest, most dangerous threat in your entire life, if a new article from Time Magazine is to be believed. So we will take you through all of that. And also, we'll get into some emails and some V-mails and lots of other things. Lots of other things with this feller, the longest-running co-host of this particular podcast. He is the Hodor of podcasting, or alternately the Shirani, if that's kind of your vibe, your deal. He's known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace and their beauty. He just wants to understand one thing about today's show. He needs to understand the
symbology.
So once we figure that out, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape together. He's Andrew Walsh, joins us from the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Hello, my friend.
What's the symbology there?
I thought you might know, since that is, I would say your top three drops you're obsessed with that I don't fully understand are Harvey Dent saying that the rain is going to wash the streets of this Batman city.
Oh, man, are you messing that up?
Okay, fine.
Wait, are you talking about the taxi driver? I have one from Harvey Dent. I do.
What's the Harvey Dent one?
Let me see if I have it in here.
Okay, but while you're looking for it, I'll say Willem Dafoe saying, what's the symbology? I understand you like that drop, and I like that you like it, but I don't totally follow. And by the way, I'm sure that there are examples the many, many examples, you know, where there's something that I play all the time, not just the ones I play specifically to bother you, but ones that you're just like, you didn't care about the movie they're from, or they don't strike you as particularly funny, but I'm obsessed with them. So one is Willem Dafoe saying, "What's the symbology?" One is whatever that one is that you have Harvey Dent saying.
Okay, here's Harvey Dent. Okay.
"I'm a man of few words, but those words will count, and so will my actions."
It is weird that I decided to isolate that. I wouldn't say I'm obsessed with it, though. I think maybe, I mean, have I put that in one mix or two? I think it stands out to you because it confuses you.
Even as I'm
you.
Saying this, I'm realizing it sounds like a criticism, and I don't
I'm not criticizing, but I don't think I use that much. Here's one that I definitely use. I don't know if you remember this one. This is one that I think that I'm pretty obsessed with.
Duplicating going around here when you're not.
We're just going to play the whole thing.
Yes, that was going to be my third one.
No, I won't play the whole thing. So obviously, yes. Toys duplication. I am obsessed with that. Harvey Dent. It's weird that I have it, but I don't think I use it that much. And what was the other one? Oh, symbology.
And the other one is Willem Dafoe saying, "What's the symbology?"
From the Boondocks.
What is that even from?
It's from the Boondock Saints.
What? What's the symbology there?
Symbology?
I'm sure the word you were looking for was symbolism. What is the symbolism there?
I think that came up because... Did I pull that because I used the word wrong one time and then I pulled it from the movie?
Are you a Boondock Saint head?
No, I was. I think like most people. The first time I watched it, I was like, "What is this?" And my friend Allison just loves, or at least loved, that movie, and I had not heard of it. And this is the, I don't know, early 2000s, and she said, you gotta watch it. And because I love Allison and her take on life, she's also the person who I can, like, you know, I wouldn't call myself a Doors fan, but you know, I definitely spent a long time listening to the Doors. And Allison is my friend who, if we're on a road trip together, you can bet your bottom dollar that we are going to be singing the entirety of the song, The Soft Parade, including the breakdown where the monk buys lunch. So anyway, she recommended the Boondock Saints. I think the first time I watched it, I did get somewhat obsessed because Willem Dafoe is just beautifully, magnificently odd in that movie, and his performance is great. Unfortunately, the older I get and the more I see that movie, I realize the rest of he's not strong enough to hold up the rest of that movie, I don't think.
Well, that movie, I think, has a lot of similarities to TBTL, believe it or not, because it's sort of like the guy who wrote and directed it was. He was a bartender, right? Famously
in
Los Angeles. And he had the script. It's like sort of classic Hollywood story. I believe he gave the script to some, you know, important Hollywood person who came into the bar. And he got this huge advance. I mean, I think everybody thought he was going to be the next, Tarantino or something. And it was, and if I remember the main beats of the story, you know, he wanted to direct it as well, and they let him have all this sort of carte blanche, and the movie ended up not becoming the theatrical hit that they hoped it would be. He also was – this is the part that I find kind of equally interesting. While he was writing a movie called The Boondock Saints and directing a movie called The Boondock Saints, I believe he was also in a band called The Boondock Saints, which
he
feels –
just went real all in.
You really, like, everything was in the basket of Boondock Sainting. But here's the thing. Even though it was not a huge commercial success, in much the way this show has never been a ratings or commercial success.
Or a neither a critical success.
Oh, right. Yeah. I forgot to include that one. The third leg of the stool of incompetence that we sit upon commercially, critically, and... what? Audience-ly?
Yeah, ratings.
Ratings-ly? Anyway, the thing about Boondock Saints is that the story was, this guy, they let him have all this creative control. He clashed with everyone. He made this movie. Nobody saw the movie. Game over. And then it developed this weird cult following. It just was this slow sort of build for years and years. And now there are like these Boondock Saint cons.
Really?
And... yeah, and like there's a I now this is a guess. This is a hazy fragment of a memory that I think I'm having. But I even think he may have... So buckle up, everyone.
Yeah, wow. This, take it to Dream Court.
I think that they may have even been able to like crowdsource another edition of the film. Or it's just my understanding is that the whole idea of this movie and the Boondock Saint verse has extended much further along and much further into time than people expected because of this kind of thing that happens, not unlike with this podcast, where if you find the people who really like the thing you're doing, it's amazing, you know, how supportive they can be and how long you can get away with doing something like this.
I'm reading his IMDb page now. His name is Troy Duffy. He looks like a guy who would write and direct the Boondock Saints. What I'm excited about and what I'm excited to tell you is he also wrote and directed the Boondock Saints 2 All Saints Day in 2009. After that, all he did was he made a short called Knight Rider 2016. That's the entirety of his writing and directing career.
Are you sure it wasn't Knight Rider 2016, parenthetically, the Boondock Saints?
Yeah, the Boondock Rider 2016. it's a spoof. It says it's a spoof of the original Knight Rider series. So he did make a parody of Knight Rider.
Yeah. I wanted to tell you about something that I'm irrationally excited about, but maybe I should tell you about it in a minute. Is that because it might be like a 5 or 6 minute stem from me.
I guess my only question for you, is it a Harvey Dent drop? Because I was already on that tip.
Oh, yes. It is time to thank our donors of the day. These generous... I mean, would you call them Boondock Saints?
I would call them.
They're just like
they dug deep into their boondocks and made and generous donations and became our own Boondock Saints.
That's right. They are saints to us. They supported us during the last TBTL-a-thon, and those donations are what are making the show possible. Today, we're thanking Alice Weimers and Gabe Clare of Davidson, North Carolina, Samuli Hiris or Hiris of Helsinki, Finland. Hell yeah, Sinki. Finland.
That was great.
That was pretty
good. I'm glad I could be here for that joke.
It's no doing coke off the butt of a cheeseburger.
Right. Oh, I thought I
can't believe you left that in.
I forgot about that. Yeah. No, I think I needed to, right? Didn't that come at the end of a... I don't know. You know, we got a note from Chris Hayes today saying that something we talked about a few weeks ago or something was busting him up. And I only have a vague recollection of that conversation. And you wrote back, oh, I'm surprised Andrew left that in. So I think I go into some sort of a fugue state for most of this.
It's good, though. I mean, when I heard your joke about Jimmy Buffett doing cocaine off the butt of a cheeseburger.
Do you get it,
though?
And
then you said that was just a lousy joke. Let's move on. I actually appreciated hearing it in the show because I found it personally really funny. And nobody knows better than me. We all stumble on this show. It's not how many times we make a bad joke. It's how many times we get back up and keep talking into the microphone. Fall 7 cheeseburger jokes, but get back up 8 times, I think. Is
but
the
I mean,
lesson
does the joke make, I mean, you, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I think there's a, never mind. I'm not going to put myself in a position of defending that joke. That joke, anybody can take that joke however they want. I'm not ashamed of that joke.
I don't think you should be. You know what I feel like, dude? Already this whole show, we're like, a quarter of the way into it, and everything I'm saying sounds like I'm subtweeting you.
No, you're not. It stops saying
I'm totally
that.
I'm not. Like, I love your Harvey Dent drop. I thought that joke was good. I'm not. This is not me trying to neg you subtly.
No,
all,
I don't
I
feel
promise.
That way. No, I don't. Okay, I don't feel that way at all. I want to. I'm a little distracted here because I just noticed something. This music that we're listening to, Bossa Nova Instrumental, it's labeled in our system. This came from you. You sent it to me a while back because I asked you for some some bed music for something we were working on. And so you and I both have this now. But for the first time, I'm playing it from iTunes. I imported it into iTunes. And iTunes, of course, will reveal, like, the metadata on it. Do you know what the artist is? The artist of this song.
Sammy Hagar.
It's called Mellow Hold Music. Do you think that, did you grab this from a CD? It's like the modern equivalent of those You Reached Our Answer Machine, But We're Not Here song CDs. Is this the Mellow Hold Music version of that?
I have bad news for you.
What?
I just typed that in. I snagged this music off of some random internet. And then when you do that in GarageBand, yeah.
You typed
by the way,
it in.
Thanks, donors of the day, for helping this happen. So what happens is what you're thinking is the metadata that was put there by some record label is literally just whatever I typed in quickly when exporting the file.
Oh, you had to write something.
I had to write something. Just like, you know, 5 days a week, we talk on this show because we got to talk about something.
Case in point. Okay, yeah, because it says artist is Mellow Hold Music and album is Luke Burbank's album. But okay.
Yep, there you go.
All right, well, so, I'm glad I went on that journey. That was really worth it.
I'm glad, though, because I got to explain my process to you of how I export files.
No, that'll be in the write-up for today's show.
Please, also, a huge thanks to Gregory Brown of Pomona, California, where my dad, Walt Burbank, lived for many years as a young person, ran cross country there at Pomona High School, and then transferred. I know I've told this story not that long ago, transferred from Pomona, which is for all intents and purposes L.A., from Pomona to Missoula, Montana, between his, I think, sophomore and junior years of high school. So he got a huge social upgrade by being the kid from California. And then Jill Brown of Chicago, Illinois. Now, this is just happenstance because these are not organized alphabetically. And unless Jill and Gregory have an extremely unconventional relationship where he lives in Pomona and she lives in Chicago, but they share a last name, I think it's just total coincidence that we have two people with the last name of Brown back to back.
That's pretty exciting right there.
Yeah.
You know what I was thinking about these donors earlier today? And I do. Sometimes I just think of the donors, even when I'm not on the air, and that's for real. And I was thinking, what I really appreciate for a lot of the folks who donate during the TBTL-a-thon is not just that they are donating their money and everything that goes along with that we talk about all the time, but for a lot of folks, unless they're in one of those families where both members of the couple are listening to TBTL, and I think that's kind of rare. I think usually it's one person in the couple who's listening to TBTL. In many cases, these folks have to say, hey, by the way, I donated to this podcast I listen to. They have to have a conversation with their significant other about why they're spending the family's money on this thing. And sometimes that can be uncomfortable. And so I thank you just for putting up with that conversation.
And I will tell people, if you're considering donating, we have it set up so that when the donation comes in and we generate the receipt, it shows up in your bank account as not pornography. That is our commitment to you. No one's going to look at this bill and go, you're giving money to what website?
Right. It actually comes – the receipt actually comes in a brown paper bag.
Yes. That's an unmarked brown paper bag.
For your privacy.
So thank you to Alice, to Gabe, to Samuli, and to Gregory and – Jill, whatever is going on with your relationship, and really all of you with your significant others and those who check on your bank account, the executors of your estate. We appreciate you supporting the show and putting up with the confused looks when you explain where the money is going. We absolutely could not do this without you. Please enjoy a few more seconds of this mellow hold music gratis.
So mellow.
All right, the thing that I just found out about as we were about to start doing the show, so it's not really officially in top stories. I guess you could file this in the category of humble brag or even just regular brag. But I got an email that they want to write a story about me in the Alaska Airlines magazine.
Oh, nice. That makes sense because they kind of – they know of you and you've done like – you've been a quote-unquote celebrity – fill in the blank for them on various things, right?
I've worked for them. I mean, I used to do their radio commercials a long, long time ago. I think it's kind of because they also sponsor Livewire. Now, I don't think somebody at Alaska, PR was able to say, you have to write about him. But, I mean, Livewire is on in Seattle. And I think it's actually – it's done okay there. Like, I think the awareness of the show is okay in Seattle. And so it's – and also, who are they going to write about, right? So they emailed and said, hey, we want to send a reporter for the magazine to a taping of Livewire, and then we want to, have them sit down with Luke and do an interview. And of the different – places that have done stories about me or the radio shows I work on or TBTL, I will say that I've probably never been more excited to be in any publication than the Alaska Airlines magazine, because there will be a moment where I can just pick the magazine up out of the back flap and I can casually flip to the page that's about me, and I can just wait until the person next to me gets eyes on that, and then they will finally understand that I am cool.
Right. Wow. So do you think that you'll be flying more during the month whenever this article comes out? Will you be buying just extra tickets? You've been trying to kind of ease off on the number of flights you take because you're constantly flying. But I think that month you need to amp that up a little bit.
Well, and not to mention that what I'm going to do, let's just say for the sake of whatever, it's the month is like November or something. I'm going to amass as many November copies of the Alaska Airlines in-flight magazine as I can. And then what I will do whenever I get on a plane is I will in the months thereafter, and I will take out that month's edition and I will put the November edition back in.
Sweet.
I will try to keep as many flights stocked with just the month where I was in there. I will just try to keep it going as long as I possibly can.
Yes. No, listen, this is what you need to do. You're going to ask them, when something like this happens, they'll give you some, a handful of copies of the magazine for posterity or to give to your family or whatever. So just milk as many as you can out of them. And let's say you get 50 of these things. Whenever you get on a flight, make sure you got three of those bad boys in your briefcase, mm-hmm. right? And just the row. And maybe this is what you were saying, and I'm just repeating it, but just the row you're sitting in every flight
right.
for the next year. The neighbors, when they pull out that magazine, that's you. And then you might even – do you have any of those little little tabs or colorful mm-hmm. sticky notes?
That won't be suspicious at all. Those little arrows.
Yeah.
That you can stick to the relevant portion of a magazine or book. Yeah, absolutely. I'll do is I'll go to the last page and I'll fill in the crossword puzzle so it says, please see page 8 where there is an article about
right. –
a very cool guy, a very hashtag cool guy public radio host.
Or glue all the other pages together so it only opens to the – I assume that this is a kind of a centerfold situation as well.
I assume that my representatives, that they negotiated that I would only do the magazine if I get the centerfold.
Right. It's not sexy necessarily. It's just a fold up, but a big picture of you in
yeah.
probably a suit. I'm gonna
probably
say.
but with my hashtag relaxed Rod Laver sneakers on, which lets everybody know that I'm cool and I get it, and I'm not like a suit. I'm not like a stiff guy.
How about this? How about guy in suit, Luke in suit, but feet up on the desk with the cool guy tennis shoes. It's just yeah, I mean, he's a good looking guy. He's a sharp dressed man, but he doesn't take himself too seriously, and he likes to kick back. Literally.
Yeah, work hard, play hard.
Right.
That whole thing. Now I just got to get a desk.
You do. You need to get a desk.
And a photo.
And maybe, if I can add one thing to it, maybe a kind of a Will Smith, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, circa 1993 ball cap that you wear backwards. Can you picture the cap he's wearing in the credits of that show? The really kind of snug-fitting.
Sure. Do you know how in style that is, by the way?
Yeah.
How legitimately in style that is for youth. It's
wearing it backwards cocked like him?
I mean, probably whatever the least likely way to wear that, what I think of as being an unlikely hat. If you were to go to Bonnaroo or Sasquatch or whatever the even more, Capitol Hill block party, you would see so many young males dressed like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It would blow your mind. And if you think I'm joking, I'm not.
No, I mean, walking around the U District, it's. I actually think it's kind of cool because I always liked 90s fashion. But even the dorkier
sides of... And I continue to hate 90s fashion.
There's like two parts. Like, I was all grungy and everything, and I really felt like I was born in the right era for myself. But then you also have like the stuff that we didn't think about for a long time when we thought about 90s fashion, which is like the very high-waisted jeans and everything. But no, the high-waisted jeans are in. Is there, the fact that I'm talking about it means they're definitely probably on their way out again. But yeah, walking around the university district these days is certainly walking around a set of Seinfeld or something.
This is why I try to keep it classic now. I got my kind of medium slim cut jeans, so not skinny jeans, but not like giant JNCO jeans. Just try to keep that pretty much in the normal range, and then a black T-shirt, and then I just look like Bobby Hill from King of the Hill, according to
that's my wife.
Classic,
according to my wife, and it's a classic look, Andrew, that nobody will ever be able to give me grief over, even 20, 30 years from now. So I am going to be in that. I'm going to be in the Inflate magazine, and I'm very excited. I'm also a power user of that magazine. No joke. Even though it's not unlike SkyMall, it's not unlike a bunch of things, like even maybe TV shows. We were talking the other day, Andrew, about how you'll watch Columbo or Murder, She Wrote, and it's not even the content that you're so interested in. It's just it's kind of a nice relaxing time for your brain and your eyes, right? Mm-hmm. It's not because you're really on the edge of your seat about who committed the crime or if they're going to solve it, because you kind of know that that's going to happen. And I will say that, like, I love to – I read the they don't do it anymore, but when they used to have the SkyMall catalog or the Hammacher Schlemmer catalog or whatever it was, I would look at those every single time I was on the plane, even though none of the products changed. They would sometimes reorganize them, but it was always basically the same stuff. It was – a giant rock that you can put over a sprinkler that's unsightly in your yard. It was a crossword puzzle the size of your wall if you want it. It was a weird ramp for your dog to use to get in the car if they're elderly. And then oddly, like two pages of Lord of the Rings shit for
really?
Some reason. Mm. Yeah. I it sounds like there's a hot dog toaster, hot dog and bun toaster, which is pretty cool looking. So I just would look through it because it would relax me. And I kind of read the in-flight magazines, in particular the Alaska in-flight magazine, for the same reason. Because there's going to be like 35 ads for dental, like getting your teeth fixed. Not like dentistry, like you have a cavity, but like cosmetic dentistry. There's going to be one ad for Dr. Brian Gertz for hair transplant. There's going to be like 7 or 8 ads for like executive matchmaking.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Like everybody, it's just lunch, like, which is literally the name of one of these.
I've heard radio ads for that one, yeah.
And then some very weirdly specific Alaska ads. I mean, to the state of Alaska, there's a place called Darwin's Theory. That's a bar it's somewhere in Alaska. I want to say it's in Juneau, maybe. And they just have the most like ridiculous and awesome ad that's always in the Alaska Airlines magazine. It's like Darwin's Theory. Their logo is like a monkey staring at a skull, and then just lists all the cool stuff about this bar, Darwin's Theory.
Looks like they're in Anchorage, just for the record. I'm looking at it now.
I will never go there, but I love their ad. So I get on the plane and I read the Alaska Airlines magazine just because it comforts me for some reason, even though much of the content is the same from month to month.
I don't want to make you feel bad. This is a nice honor. Why are you not being asked, though, to do like the safety video for him? I think you should do the next safety video.
I wish you knew. Am I on one or two?
Oh, the cruise line.
Safety videos. Yeah. I'm trying to think of how many times I've actually been hired to do some version of that where it's just been an unmitigated disaster. I know that I don't think that the Holland America Cruise Lines ever used this very involved 2-day shoot that we did on a boat in Florida that was, you know, the evacuation whatnot, because even though they wanted it to be kind of, you know, funny and not boring, I think when they saw our version of funny and not boring, they were not impressed, and they decided to go back to boring.
Luke, I'm sorry. I'm probably not really here for the rest of the show. I mean, physically, I am here for the show, but mentally and emotionally, I am at Darwin's Theory right now. I am clicking through the photos. These are my people. This is my place. This place has a free pop. I mean, I assume it's free popcorn machine. And it looks like in every single photo of this popcorn machine looks like full and fresh. You know, it's not like one of those bars you go into and you're like, yay, there's a popcorn machine. And there's just like a tiny little bit at the bottom that was left over from last spring. They have a CD. I mean, I'm sure you know all of this. I'm sure you've had
the
same Darwin's Theory.
Well, you're looking at the expanded verse of Darwin's Theory, because I'm just looking at the like small 3-inch by 3-inch you know, print ad that shows up in the back of the Alaska Airlines magazine. So you're now more up to speed on it than I am. But if we ever go to Anchorage,
yes, we got to do an Anchorage show.
We got to go to that place. We got to do a live show from Darwin's Theory.
We have to. We just have to tell the boss. You don't understand. They have popcorn in Anchorage. We have to do a show from there.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, our top story today, this weird kind of internet tussle that Kevin Durant got into earlier this week. Now, it's a little complicated, but I'll try to explain it in a way that makes sense. Kevin Durant, the noted basketball player, had somebody on his Twitter page tweet at him, "Man, I respect the hell out of you, but give me one legitimate reason for leaving Oklahoma City other than getting a championship." Now, for those of you that don't follow NBA basketball, what basically happened was Kevin Durant is one of the very best players in the NBA. He was on the team from Oklahoma City, a team that was previously the Seattle Supersonics, but putting that aside, he left that team to go play for the Golden State Warriors because the Golden State Warriors were the best team in basketball. And so he kind of went over to the what was already the best team because he wanted to get a championship. And he's gotten a lot of crapola for that. Because I guess there's this idea in sports that you're supposed to be noble and you're supposed to play for your team that's maybe less good and figure out how to make them better and win the championship. You should not just go and join the team that's already super good and winning championships. Particularly people in Oklahoma City really don't like him now. So this guy tweets at him. And then Kevin Durant, who, by the way, his Twitter avatar, at least at this point, I think is a kid from the movie The Sandlot.
Oh, really?
Which is, you know.
Cute.
Wouldn't have guessed. I wouldn't have guessed him for a Sandlot head, but maybe he is. So this guy says, "I respect the hell out of you, but give me one legitimate reason for leaving Oklahoma City other than getting a championship." And then Kevin Durant responds to him. He didn't like the organization or playing for Billy Donovan. That was the head coach of that team. His roster wasn't that good. It was just him and Russ. That Russ is a reference to Russell Westbrook, who is a player he played with there. Now, this is a weird thing because Kevin Durant is responding to this guy, but he's writing in the third person. And so it spawned a whole bunch of theories about what he was actually thinking was going on. And the leading theory appears to be that Kevin Durant also has some number of like Twitter egg accounts that he's started that he uses to go into the comment section on his own Twitter page and mix it up with people. But in this case, he forgot he was still logged in as Kevin Durant.
That's a nightmare scenario there. So
it really is. And there's, by the way, there's more evidence to this point. Barstool Sports went and found his Instagram page, and then they found somebody who would comment a lot on his Instagram page who wasn't allegedly Kevin Durant. It was somebody who was Instagramming under the name Choir Sultan. And then they just did a real sleuth job on it, and they figured out that, like, oddly enough, there was like NBA players that were following Choir Sultan. Like, why would they be following this random non-Kevin Durant person called Choir Sultan? And then they figured out that Choir and Sultan are two streets that intersect right where Kevin Durant grew up in, I believe, Maryland. And so it would appear that he has, like, he's doing this kind of stuff over on Instagram. So if he's doing it over there, it wouldn't be a stretch to imagine that he's been doing it on Twitter for who knows how long. And in this case, he just He got his screens mixed up, and he went ahead and by the way, he deleted it like immediately, but because this is the internet, that somebody captured it, and so it lives forever now.
The people who you said other NBA stars are following Choir Sultan. So does that mean that other players know that Kevin Durant has this alter ego, or at least one alter ego, and they all think it's funny?
I think it's not uncommon for I know that it even happens with famous people. I'm not talking like Alaska Airlines In-Flight Magazine famous, but like lower level people that I know who are kind of celebrities or whatever, is that they'll have like, I know one person who's actually legitimately kind of a celebrity, and he's in like a private Facebook group with a bunch of people who are also pretty famous. And so they can like talk to each other and post things, but not everybody in the world is looking at it, or not everybody who's their friend. And I assume Kevin Durant and a lot of these other major athletes have some way of having almost their own little mini social media experience that just involves them and their friends and does not involve the whole wider world seeing every single thing they're posting.
I guess what I'm getting at, though, is so let's say, because this sounds pretty embarrassing, right? We've seen this happen to other well-known people. You mentioned Scott Adams of Dilbert fame recently. Like, he's a troll, and he was going in and creating fake identities and then going in and defending Scott Adams. This story is like 15 years old at this point, I think. But if Kevin Durant is doing this under a nom de plume, by the way, I was the first one to use that word during this story, which gives me, I think, 3 fancy points. Are we still on the fancy point system?
We are, and you just pulled into the lead, my friend. Congratulations.
3 fancy points. But if it's kind of like in his circle, it's known that he's using this name, then maybe he wasn't doing – maybe he's not that embarrassed about it. I haven't read this story. Everything I know is what you're telling me now. Let me put it this way. Let's say that I was doing this, I created a fake account for myself on Twitter. Anybody who, criticizes us about TBTL, I'm going in there and I'm just like, kind of being an un-Andrew-like, like really aggressive, like shutting down, whatever. I'm getting into fights and stuff all the time.
Clapping back, by the way, is the, that's the new term for when somebody is saying critical things on Twitter and you're, by the way, I'm sorry, but can you hear this mariachi band that's on the street here in Chicago?
I heard something for a second. Yeah, let's hear that.
Oh, man.
Ah, it's a hotel. You can't open the window, probably.
They won't let me open the window because I guess I'm on suicide watch.
Yeah. Oh, you should have known that took your shoelaces.
There is a mariachi band that has set up across the street from the hotel and is performing.
That's like, nice.
It's cool.
That's life in the Circle City.
That is. Although I'm not in the Circle City anymore, but...
Oh, right. Damn it.
You get
the point. Of course, I know that you're not. I just love the idea of the Circle City. Anyway, so let's say that I've made this at least one fake account.
Yeah, you're clapping
back. And I'm doing it. I'm clapping back. Clap me and I'll clap you back. But you know about it. If you, Luke Burbank, know about it, and you and I are kind of joking about it and be like, Andrew, yeah, are you firing up your old alternate identity here, and it's less embarrassing than if I'm just secretly going home at the end of the day doing this and I'm supposed to be the only one who knows it. It really gives you the image of a guy like, sitting in a dark room just like angrily writing these things. So I guess what I'm getting at with the Durant thing is if this was kind of quasi public knowledge in his circles, that's less embarrassing. Do you have any sense of that from actually reading the stories?
Well, here's what I think. I don't think it was a secret from his friends, again, a.k.a. By the way, his brother, this choir. Oh, and I will also mention that account, once it was compromised, Choir Sultan, it got its name changed to like Assassin's Creed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it still has all the same followers. So he like, it's pretty obvious that like that was his account. I think it was SB Nation figured it out, and then Durant went and changed it. But I don't think his famous basketball friends are following what Choir Sultan or what Kevin Durant's other like pretend Twitter accounts, what they're saying about him in the comments about him. I think most of those guys are just too busy being famous to really care. And then the second is, if they did know about it and they did see that he was in there clapping back at people, I think it's probably like they're kind of encouraging that, because I think a lot of these, you know, a lot of these famous athletes and just famous people in general, but particularly athletes, I'll say, because if you're an athlete, there is going to be a group of people who love you, the people that root for your team, and then there's going to be a group of people who hate you because you play for a different team. So you are going to be in the crosshairs of a lot of online, you know, hassling. And so it's probably like, if you're James Harden of the Houston Rockets and you're friends with Kevin Durant on his like kind of low key Instagram page, and then you see Kevin Durant just clapping back like crazy on all these people, you're probably like, you can totally identify. A, you might have your own version of this going, and B, you're like, about time somebody told these knuckleheads, you know, to calm down, to paraphrase James Harden. So that's my take on that. I don't think that among Kevin Durant's immediate group of friends, although there was an ex-player named Steven Jackson who called him an egg today, an empty egg, like as in one of those Twitter avatars that doesn't have any kind of a thing even uploaded. So I guess not everybody is like giving him a pass, but I'll tell you why I am giving him a pass on this, because he was at a conference in San Francisco earlier this week. So after this whole thing came out, but you know, just a couple of days ago, and here's what he said when he was asked about it. He said, "I have another Instagram account, but it's just for my friends and my family. So I wouldn't say that I was using it to clap back at anyone. I was using Twitter to engage with fans. I think it's a great way to engage with basketball fans. I happen to take it a little too far. That's what happens sometimes when I get into these basketball debates about what I really love, to play basketball. I don't regret clapping back at anybody or talking to my fans on Twitter. I do regret using my former coach's name and the former organization I played for. That was childish. That was idiotic. All those type of words. I apologize for that. I don't think I'll stop engaging with fans. I really enjoy it. It's a good way to connect with us all. But I'll scale it back a little bit right now and just focus on playing basketball. I'll move on from that. It was a tough to deal with yesterday. I was pretty mad at myself. I definitely want to move on and keep playing basketball." So that's a pretty good mea culpa, if you ask me.
That is a great mea culpa. Absolutely. He's a man of few words, but those words count. And so do his actions.
I'm a man of few words, but those words will count, and so will my actions.
That's from the...
What is the symbology of
that? That's from the press conference in San Francisco. It's a little bit of audio I have from it.
He was at TechCrunch, which is not the place I expect Kevin Durant. Sandlot, Avatar, and TechCrunch. Not the things I'm expecting from Kevin Durant. But anyway...
That's a great statement, man. And he said that at a podium, or that he said that...
He said that at a podium.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's honest, and you know, yeah, I made a stupid mistake. But again, he didn't do anything. He didn't call anybody horrible names or anything like that, right? He was just...
And I will say that His Instagram stuff is a little more pointed. It's just basically saying to people that criticize him, like, yeah, you can't play. Like, yeah, are you on varsity? Are you playing basketball for a living? Like, you know, it's a little bit more, the knives are a little bit more out, just in being kind of petty and doing that thing that I like to do sometimes, where you tell them that you're leaving in an Audi, but then really it's Jetta. But yeah, none of it is threats of violence, and none of it is probably any different than what all of these athletes are thinking when someone criticizes them. And a lot of them have the good sense not to get involved. Some of them do. And in fact, that's the one criticism of Durant, is like, hey, if you want to say this stuff to people, just say it to them from your regular account and own it, basically. But I don't know. I have to say, he seems like a nice enough guy. It's also, I mean, overall a nice enough guy, maybe not in certain cases. But it's just as if we needed reminding of this. It's another indication that nothing, no accomplishment, no amount of approbation from other people, no amount of money will fill whatever that thing is inside many of us that makes us feel bad and take criticism very poorly. Because as I said yesterday, kind of paraphrasing Mike Greenberg from Mike and Mike, you know, Kevin Durant has more money than he'll ever be able to spend in his life. He was the MVP of the finals. You can't do much better than that. He's adored by a huge number of people not just in America, but in the world. That's all on one side of the ledger. And then you have this guy, and then you have Cole Cashwell. You have at Cole Cashwell saying, respect the hell out of you, man, but give me one legitimate reason for leaving OKC other than getting a championship. And on the one side of the ledger is everything, and on the other side of the ledger is a bad feeling sent to you by Cole Cashwell.
And pretty polite. That starts with, yeah, I respect the hell out of you.
By the way, there was another, I don't have it right in front of me, but then Durant made another statement more recently. So like after this one where he was really landed out there, and he talked about how he hasn't been able to eat because he's felt so dumb over this. Oh. And then he described like what led up to this tweet happening. And I thought it was so relatable. He was like, I was watching football. I fell asleep. I woke up and my phone had charged and I opened Twitter and I saw this and I just reacted. I was like, is that not like I could so identify with, right, that exact kind of chain of events.
Right. So I'm sorry. Just make sure I follow. So this whole thing was blowing up around him while he was napping and then he woke up.
No. The reason that he decided to clap back at this random guy who was just kind of giving him a little bit of grief for leaving OKC. He was just, I guess my point in that is it's weird why, if you're somebody like Kevin Durant, or even if you're you and I, I mean, on a much, much smaller scale, on the rare occasion when someone decides to kind of give us shit online or like through our email system, I think most of the time we just ignore it. But then every once in a while, it's like you just got up from a nap and you're just kind of grumpy still.
I gotcha. Right.
Yeah. So that was all about his initial response. That was why he was giving some more context to how it went down. But I'm just saying it's such an odd thing when you get negative feedback from somebody who you don't really know, if you're even remotely in the public eye again. I don't know what we're definitely not in the public eye, but we're not exactly normal private citizens. What are we in the semi-public eye? Like, what would you call our level of notoriety?
I would say the decreasing public eye.
Have you been looking at the ratings again?
Everything's fine. I did this the other day. As a matter of fact, I wasn't sure if I should bring this up only because I don't think it's a super embarrassing story, but I certainly don't necessarily have a great power out for it. I'm looking for it now on the Sten's page, on the Facebook page. There was like one thread one day that was just like everybody just being very nice and loving. And it's not for me to look at. It's not that big of a deal, but like everybody's just venting about words that you and I misuse. So I'm just like scrolling through and, you know, just like whatever. It's just like, and so I saw that, I think, maybe it was, I don't know if it was the same day or not. And then there was another thread where a bunch of people were complaining about us using the term peace and love too much. Unrelated thread, but it's just like one of those things. It's not that big of a deal. I'm not telling anybody they shouldn't be having those conversations on the fan page or anything. This story is not about anybody being dumb except for me. But in this thread about people complaining about us saying peace and love too much, somebody said, yeah, for me saying peace and love when you're about to, you know, give an opinion is like saying no offense, but just drop it and give your opinion already or something like that. It was fine. But I had to reply to it. I wrote ... He posts in a thread in which people are complaining about things we say. And then I posted a little gif of, isn't it ironic? You know, the song, isn't it ironic? And I thought I was being funny. I mean, I thought I was being a little bit sharp, but a little bit funny. But then the worst was, then the guy wrote back, like, this is all public on Facebook. And he's just like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to be a jerk. And I was looking back and like, oh no, that makes me the jerk, buddy. You weren't a jerk. I just couldn't let it go. And I didn't mean it. I wasn't mad at everybody on the thread. I wasn't mad at the guy who wrote this. I would probably just woke up from a nap too. 90% of my life is actually waking up from naps, which is odd how that math works. But, you know, again, I didn't think it was – I thought I was being kind of clever and maybe a little bit of clap back, as you say, but or as everybody but me up until this day says, apparently. I felt bad about that. Sometimes, like, the worst thing is somebody's like, oh, man, I was being a jerk. And they're like, no, I was the one being a jerk. Oh, God. Then it ends in a group hug.
That's one of the – I have to say, I don't personally embrace all of the Bible teaching of my youth.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one thing that I still think of to this day, and it's very hard to do. I certainly am not always successful, but it's something to the effect of, if you love your enemy, like you know, like love your enemy or treat your enemy well, it will heap burning coals upon his head.
I like the one thing that you took from the Bible is a great way to get back at people, killing them.
Yeah,
with
but
kindness.
By being nice to them. Yes. But by being nice to them, and it is true. There's almost nothing worse than you know, kind of. I'm not saying you went hard on this, but there's nothing worse than kind of going in hard on somebody in whatever circumstance, and them just being like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I really didn't mean that. You know, like them just being nice and apologetic. And then you just like, what do I do with these feelings?
I know. Yeah. Anyway, so
we were gonna battle.
To that
I wanna
fella,
mention, though,
I'm sorry. And to everybody. I think I have a story like this at least like three times a year, right? Where I have to come on the radio and be like, or whatever the hell this is, and say, I was an idiot on Facebook again. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm just an idiot sometimes.
Meanwhile, all of those posts defending us from Choir Sultan.
Right.
That's definitely not us. That is might be Kevin Durant, but it's definitely not us.
Actually, that was the name of the... That was Choir Sultan as a person who was complaining about peace and love, if I recall. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right, we've got a V-mail today, Andrew, that is epic but worth it. Would you describe it
I would
that way?
Definitely describe it that way. Do you remember a couple of days ago, we got a voicemail that we played from a listener. I want to say her name was Rachel. It wasn't. I just want to say her name was Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
Where she was describing a date. It might have even been a first date that she had with a fella. And they were back at her apartment. Her roommates were there. They were watching TV or something. And then the young man had to excuse himself. And turns out he was having a bathroom situation in a tucked away bathroom in their apartment that wasn't used much. He found himself without toilet paper and also without a plunger that was needed. It was a harrowing story. And we heard it from Rachel's perspective. And I think you said, God, I'd love to hear it from his perspective.
Yeah.
Just a quick reminder, she ends up marrying this fella. Well, this fella called us. And here's the story from his perspective.
So my wife yesterday brought up a story about how I locked myself in the bathroom when we first started dating. And I said, oh, what made you think of that? And she goes, well, I kind of shared it on a podcast that's nationally broadcasted. So there's that. And here I am explaining my side of the story.
I'm going to pause it right there and just quickly say this fella has an infectious laugh. I love his laugh. And also, his laugh at times reminds me of Chris Hayes a little bit. I don't know if you're going
to
pick up on that, too.
I'm interested to learn that that the listener hadn't run this by her now husband. And also, it sounds like he's probably not a TBTL 10.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I had assumed that he sort of maybe was a listener. And so this was like he was aware of this whole thing as the message was being left. Like he might have even been, you know, in the other end of the room just listening and laughing. But no, sounds like for him to find out that some thousands of people in America heard this story about him because his wife called in to TBTL. That's great. I love it. And he sounds like he's really rolling with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
A little background information in the story. My wingman and one of my good friends at the time came from Guinea, West Africa. And when I first started dating Rachel, I had a horrible sinus infection. And I talked to my buddy Yamusa, and he said, eat a lot of peppers, because that's what they do down there, and it clears them all out. And I took his advice. I went to the store, bought 4 or 5 habanero peppers, and ate them all at once, which that in itself was an experience. Surprisingly, it worked. I was cleared out. I went into this date, had confidence. And midway through it, when I was interacting with my now wife and her roommates, I heard people talking. I don't know what they were saying, but I was focused solely on my stomach, and I could see the world around me. I probably stopped the mid-sentence and said, excuse me, I need to use the restroom. Found my way to the furthest bathroom and found myself in one of the most uncomfortable situations of my life.
When I imagine this,
so
Andrew,
small.
I feel like it's a scene from the movie Jacob's Ladder, starring Tim Robbins. Like, he's just stumbling around in this, like, weird, out-of-focus haze, just trying to get to a bathroom and trying to get as down some hallway and as far away from this lady that he's feeling it for as he can, but in a total just like confused, staggering haze.
Almost like a tunnel vision where everything is blurry.
Yes.
Around you.
Situations of my life. One, the bathroom was so small, my knees were touching the wall as I went, and I was defecating with a capital D in that situation.
Hey, don't be fishing for show titles. This is your first time on TVTL, buddy.
And really thinking about, well, this is going to ruin this relationship. And that got worse when I realized there was no toilet paper in this bathroom. So I found myself with this question. Do I invite this girl into my fog of shame? Or
again, stop it.
Yeah.
That's our job.
Yeah, you're just showing off.
Fog of shame, or do I MacGyver my way out of this? And I dug deep into that MacGyvering situation. I was thinking, do I use the toilet paper roll? There's a shower in there. I didn't know if it worked or not. Do I somehow use that? Or the worst one was, do I use the hand towel, somehow dispose of its remains, or sneak it out of the room without them realizing it, and then replace it at a later date? Somewhere in that process, I realized these are all horrible ideas, and I call Rachel over to the cloud, and there was definitely pity in her. Oh, okay, yeah, I'll get you some really quickly. So when she comes over with toilet paper, I use it, and you can believe it, I clog the toilet. And I find myself again, do I invite this girl into my, or do I MacGyver it? And lo and behold, I found myself MacGyvering it again. And then, went through the same process. Do I somehow shovel this into the shower and disposing of the contents in CSI-style fashion? But then it leads to the question of, why did you use my shower in the bathroom while you're in the bathroom? Do I somehow use the hand towel again? These were all bad choices. But when I go to the door to call her in, I realized I locked myself in, and this bathroom was pretty far away from everyone. So I sat there alone for a while, thinking of choices on what to do and how to communicate with these people. Luckily, I think it was even her roommate who came by first and asked if I was okay. And I said, no, there's no plunger in here. I clogged the toilet. I locked myself in. And luckily, Rachel eventually came over with a plunger. And I thought to myself, man, this girl either really likes me or she has incredibly low standards. it could be the latter for that one right there. But, I mean, luckily she was really into me. And and we are married to this day. So, there's the situation. My wife has just heard what I said, and she's saying bail. So, here we go. All right.
Say power out.
Power out. Power out.
I wondered if that was going to happen.
I love that voicemail. Those two voicemails are going to go on the greatest hits voicemail CD that you're producing, right?
Yeah, I'm going to get right on that. I have to say, if I'd have known there was a shower in that bathroom, I think that would have, that would have, like, I would have probably, if I were in this listener's, or I guess this caller's shoes, I think I would have considered just using the shower. Like, this is before any toilet paper has been brought to the bathroom. Like, just
disrobe.
I would disrobe, jump in the shower. But then he brings up a good point, which would be like, at some point she might go in the bathroom and notice that, like, the shower has been run and go, why did that happen? At which point I would just play dumb. I would say, I don't know.
Really?
Well, see, this is the thing, yeah, though. And now I'm playing it out of my mind, and I'm realizing that it would have been way worse if he would have followed a Burbankian, like a Burbankian series of mistruths and then doubling down on the lie, because it would have been like, I didn't take a shower in there. And then, so then she would have been confused, and like, you've been starting the relationship off on a lie. What this guy did that was really smart. I mean, he was really rolling the dice, but he just was like kind of open about what happened. Like, I clogged the toilet, or there's no toilet paper. And like, but they didn't start their relationship off on a series of lies, which would have absolutely been what happened if I was in there.
I am loving this conversation I'm picturing in my head, where you come out, your hair is wet. You clearly just had a shower.
Unless it's gone very wrong, none of it should have gotten in his hair.
Well, you know what? I just can't imagine taking a shower without, like, dunking myself into the shower. Okay, so you've taken a very targeted shower, we'll call it, and your hair isn't wet.
Title.
But chances are, it's pretty clear that somebody has used the shower. It's just you're going to hear the shower, but I like the fact that you're just saying, what is the Shaggy defense, right, that you always talk about?
Yeah, it wasn't me.
It wasn't me. No, I don't know what you're talking about. No, there's not even a shower in there. I don't know what you're talking about. That shower was not in there when I was in there.
But see, what happens then is, whereas what happened to this caller is a normal part of life after you eat a bunch of hot peppers.
Mm-hmm.
And his now wife was able to, she was able to sort of assess the whole situation based on the facts that she had and decide, this is not a deal breaker for me. I like this guy. Whereas had he lied like I would have and been like, I don't know what you mean, I didn't run the shower, then she would have been like, is this person insane?
Right.
Like, are they mentally ill? Do they have some kind of a, is there a medication that they should be taking a lot of, or that they shouldn't be taking, that they're not taking any of, whatever that is. Like, you know what I mean? Like, to double down on it and to just basically lie through your teeth would have been way worse than just kind of copying to the problem, because I think most people can deal with someone having a stomachache. What they have a harder time with is this person actually connected to reality?
Right. Can you imagine? Let's talk about the other timeline here, too. Let's say that his buddy doesn't tell him about the pepper solution, so he never eats the peppers, and he goes on this date with his sinus problems. And it's not horrible. It's not like a nightmare scenario like this. But he's just a little bit dull and listless during the whole date because he's just kind of like got this sinus issue. And, there's no great story about it, but they just don't end up seeing each other again because it's just not that great of an impression. Yet, there's no way when you're sitting on the toilet just dying of embarrassment and internal distress,
putting the D in defecation,
right, that you can possibly imagine, this is actually okay. This is better than it could have been. Perspective.
Yes. Perspective. I totally agree. I mean, this is, we're getting into Sliding Doors territory, a movie I've never seen, but constantly refer to. You never know how life is going to go. And yeah, had he like taken a bunch of corporate Western over-the-counter medicine, so-called medicine for his sinuses, he could have been all spaced out and just kind of just not a very appealing date for reasons of being medicated. So you just never know how life's going to go, and it sounds like in this case it worked out just fine for those two yeah, crazy kids.
Well, I'm glad it worked out, and also maybe he'll enjoy this podcast and become a listener.
Maybe he can become our regular show titler, because he,
oh yeah,
without even knowing what a TBTL is, he ripped off like three totally decent show titles.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if he's got a podcast. Probably. Speaking of show titles, I have written down here Third Leg of the Stool of Incompetence. Okay. And Clap Me and I'll Clap You Back. And that's
I like
all
that.
I got. Oh, looking back to yesterday, we still haven't used Please Mr. Hot Dog Was My Father, but I guess that's cheating.
Well, you just said it, though.
I did. So
What was yesterday again?
Yesterday was Paint Me Yellow and Take Me to the Circle City. That was a good show title.
I actually like Clap Me and I'll Clap You Back.
All right, let's do that.
Clap me and I'll clap you back. Clap me and I'll clap you back. You know that song, right?
I was thinking, isn't that a Dre lyric that I was thinking of?
I know there's a Digital Underground. We can't play it, I'm sure, but there's a Digital Underground song that says, if you kiss me, then I'll kiss you back. Kiss me and I'll kiss you back. And then I think it goes downhill from there in terms of the appropriateness department.
I was thinking of Smack Me and I'll Smack You Back. I'm trying to think what that's from, though.
Is that Body Count, Ice-T's hardcore band?
Maybe. Because when I type in Smack Me and I'll Smack You Back, I just get Kiss You Back by Digital Underground. So anyway, the chances are whatever's going...
Does that song have an explicit... Let me ask you this. Does Kiss You Back have an explicit on it?
Let me see. Well, I'm just looking at the lyrics here.
Never ends well.
They say Shimmy Shimmy Coco Pop a lot. There is a version. There is an explicit version, but there's also the single version that does not have the explicit label on it. So I think we can do this, Luke.
So that's what we'll do. We'll go out with a little DU. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We'll be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. If you're about to go on a date, go easy on the hot peppers. If you're about to go on a jog in Colorado Springs, just follow your heart, I guess, on that one. Still looking for an update on that story, by the way. I'm curious.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to identify that person, and I want to know their story when they do. So everybody keep your eyes on that.
Somebody mentioned, by the way, somebody emailed to say, hey, don't forget there was a Bob's Burgers that was all dedicated to somebody called the Mad Pooper, which I have a vague recollection of. So they're thinking maybe that's why they're calling this woman the Mad Pooper.
I don't know if they struck me as – I don't know if Kathy Buddy and her family struck me as –
Kathy Buddy and her family have had enough.
I don't know if they struck me as the Bob's Burgers types. Maybe. You never know.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then – please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. I ain't sure, but I'll tell you what I do know. If you kiss me, then I'll kiss you back. Kiss you back. All right, let's do this. If you kiss me, then I'll kiss you back. Yeah, kiss me, and I'll kiss you back. If you kiss me, then I'll kiss you back. You with it? Because if you with it, I'm with it. Yo. If you kiss me, then I'll kiss you back. Yeah. Just kiss me, then I'll kiss you back. I'll kiss you back. Now I'm hoping that you hear me, cause I love it when you hear me. And I'm telling you sincerely that if you kiss me, girl, I'll kiss you back. Cause I really, really, really like you, and I just wanna make it clear. We're gonna keep it fair and square. Kiss me and I'll kiss you back. Yo, it's not funny, real cute is what you say to me. But any other way you're playing me, if you love me, then I'll love you back. When you say I get the most out of this, it kinda bothers me. A fair exchange and no robbery. Love me, girl, and I love you back. Love me, girl, and I love you back. Now I'm hoping that you hear me, cause I love it when you hear me. And you know I know you knew this, so I guess that we could do this. Kiss me and I'll kiss you back. Alright, sing it with me again, come on. If you kiss me, then I'll kiss you back. Come on, keep it going. Kiss me, then I'll kiss you back. Yeah, ladies. Love me, girl, I'll love you back. Oh yeah, yo, I'm with it. Alright, that's cool, now let's change it up a little bit.
Power out.